Welcome back to the last hour of the show at 12 o'clock. The latest listenership figures are released for radio stations across the country, independently collated. It's embargoed to 12, so I can't talk about them. But if I were to talk about them, but I can't, it probably would be to say thanks for your continued support and welcome to new listeners, if the figures in fact reflect that. I haven't seen them, but I kind of did. But anyway, we might talk about that a little bit tomorrow, but it's good to know you're out there and good to know you're listening in greater numbers all the time, which is great in this day and age, you know, because there's so much competition out there between different radio stations and podcasts and online offerings and all that kind of stuff. So it's really encouraging that more people are potentially, we'll see what the figures say, more people are potentially listening this year than they did last in really quite big numbers, which is potentially great. The Michael Murphy news is the best lift we've had ever. Bring on the season. The lift the county needs. It's fabulous news, says the listener. Indeed, it does feel good. Another caller says, I think it's brilliant that Michael Murphy is back. He'll be a mighty asset, especially with the three in the box up front. I think he'll also be a great role model for the younger players onwards and upwards. I'm delighted to hear that Michael Murphy's coming back to the Donegal team, says another one of our listeners. A great leader, a great player, a big help to Jim and all of the lads. Another caller says, if I have a house fire, I have to pay for the fire brigade or my home insurance takes up the tab. Likewise, people who climb mountains should be responsible for the cost of any rescue. A house fire is accidental. Climbing a mountain is not. Helicopter crews should not be standing by to pick up someone from a mountain who wasn't competent for the task. Mountain rescue team should also be compensated for their invaluable work. I agree with the last bit. I mean, if you have a house fire, maybe you lit a fire in the front room and it was never your intention for the house to go on fire. If you climb a mountain, maybe it's not your intention that your foot might get caught in a rock and you could fall over. So, you know, there's an argument to be made either way. We need to be able to enjoy our lives and our landscape and the great outdoors, don't we? And it's great to have the facilities there to avail of them. But I take your point. Hi, Greg. Could you ask your listeners, do they know anywhere that takes old duvets or where I can dispose of them, please? I don't think the yolks at the recycling centres, I don't think they take duvets. Maybe they're of use, but what can someone do with their duvets? That is the question. I was driving in Letterkenny yesterday on the dual carriageway. A lorry in front was travelling at about 50 miles per hour. I passed out this lorry and just after I passed, he accelerated and passed me out again. It's childish behaviour like this that causes accidents. I've seen that before. You do see that, how it happens. Right, let me see. Listening to the Fianna Fáil TD minister on your show, that was yesterday, talks a good game, but how many drivers are involved in road traffic incidents while still disqualified? Other drivers on non-Irish licence? Does the time fine fit the crime? It's not an easy fix, but revenue capture, in my opinion, is taken more seriously by them. There are stats as it relates to those most likely to be involved in collisions. I don't have them to hand, but I have seen them. Let me see. Over to these comments here now. I live 8 kilometres from that area and I struggle to get my kids into secondary school there. This must be Milford. As an Irish citizen, will my children be pushed further down the queue to accommodate other citizens now? Asks a listener. Again, that's someone's genuine concern that should be addressed. That's how you do it. You talk to people who've got concerns. The difference between Ukrainian refugees and IPAS applicants is that Ukrainians come from a civilised Christian country with similar traditions and cultures to ourselves. They also need a passport or electronic passport to enter the country. The majority were women and children fleeing war. The government is now encouraging Ukrainians to leave Ireland to make room for IPAS applicants. Terrible times ahead. There's a few bits in that. I mean, firstly, all IPAS applicants... need to educate ourselves as to what their cultural background is. Many of them are Christians, by the way. But anyway, that's your view. And they also, they put in brackets, I can't see this being read out. I don't know, people haven't learned listening to the show yet. Councillor Martin McDermott, really appreciate your patience. I know your time is precious, like everybody's time, but I didn't want to rush this, but I won't keep you too long either. So, good morning to you. And what is this announcement from the department as it relates to the DCB scheme? This is following preliminary research findings, which we've been talking an awful lot about over the last good while, Martin.
Yes, good morning, Greg. I think it's an important announcement, first of all, for homeowners, because it now allows homeowners that have got a remedial option other than an option one
And option one's full demolition.
Yes, mm-hmm. option one's full demolition. So anyone that's got an option other than option one now have the availability to send that application back to the housing agency. And the housing agency will do a full review of their application just to be sure that they have the right remedial option. Because, you know, over the past, particularly over the past couple of years, people have got options, even options through the local authority back, going back before the new enhanced scheme came in 2023, that have options of remediations that over the last couple of years, the house would have deteriorated. They would have found more cracks either within the house or outside the house. And as the scheme stood at the minute, they would have to come out of the scheme and reapply as a new applicant, mm-hmm. Go through the process again to be able to get that reviewed. This now opens the door for applicants that they don't have to do that. They can just, you know, send their application in along with whatever evidence they have to the housing agency.
A lot of people were given option one, and then that was downgraded to options 2 to 5. By the housing agency, if I understand correctly. Yeah. Now they're being told that they can go back to that agency again and appeal that. What might change?
Yeah, well, I think what will change, Greg, is that, you know, the evidence now that's coming forward, and you would have had Professor Dunlop and Anders Lehman and different people on your programme. The National Standards Authority are doing a review, as we know, of IS 465. So hopefully within the next number of months, that review will be done. That will allow these families that have got downgrades to go back to the housing agency. And, you know, I think people should maybe not just jump here today and, you know, send their applications back. And I think it would be advisable to wait to the IS 465, is reviewed and that review is out there, to send it back in, because there's quite a large, you know, probability at the minute that, you know, that, will change significantly, according to the research and the evidence that's been, I suppose, here now for the last number of years.
But so they've seen enough. They've seen enough then to determine that IS 465. Then there's more to it than that.
Yes.
But why go a little bit at this point, if you know what I mean, until such time as the science is fully understood? Because still, if you're on 2 to 5 and you appeal and you're given full demolition, it may still not include rising walls, foundations, for an example.
Yeah, so it might not. Yeah. It might not until IS 465 is updated.
Or it may not even after that, but do you know what I mean? It's still not known.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's correct. But there are quite a number of applicants at the minute that have been given remediation options that just don't stack up. When the department was up, we met the department, and I think I was on your show talking to you before we met the department, and when the department came up, this was one of the main things that we discussed with them. That was on the Thursday. On the Friday, I took them out to a number of houses to show them, you know, firsthand the issues that we have. And I took them to a house that, you know, clearly when they got there and looked at what I was trying to explain to them, they got, you know, that this is not working, this is not right. Because houses would be given an option 3, for instance, which is demolition of the inside and outside walls to downcourse level, which was leaving in the rising walls between foundation and downcourse. That house blocks was built with the same supplier that the rising walls was built with. And it made absolutely no sense to, you know, give someone €388,000.
I've spoken to people that have landed on the site and the builder is starting to put blocks on rising walls that are crumbling. I know that has actually happened as a fact. Yeah. One thing I can't understand, sorry, and I'm ignorant on some of this. It's hard to keep your head around it, right? This is billions of euro we're talking about here potentially, but if the government has seen enough in the evidence to suggest that IS 465, there's more to this problem than that covers, and they say to people, if you've been given option 2 to 5, reapply, because we've learned a little bit more here and we may actually now offer you full demolition. Why would they encourage people to continue with 2 to 5 if they wanted to, because it wouldn't be science-based, and still offer a 40-year government guarantee to people going ahead with 2 to 5, even though they're flying a flag suggesting that the science is going to suggest full demolition in all cases. I can't get my head around that. Can you?
Well, I suppose the problem maybe, Greg, with that is that if that was to change, the full legislation of the scheme would have to change. Okay. And I don't think that can happen right away. If that was a decision that was made by the department or by the minister, that would have to be a legislative change. That would have to go through the Houses of Oireachtas, and as you know, that's going to be a bit of a problem for the next wee while. So I think that's the reason that option. And you know, there are people out there that, you know, maybe want to go ahead with the remediation option, and that's fine, you know, for people that want to do that as well. Mm. So I don't think that could happen just that quick. So I think that's probably the reason.
What about someone who are up to the square on option 205 and are now saying, hold on your second, I only continued on here because this was the show in town and I need to get into a house. The boat sailed for them to get a review, I presume.
Oh, look, if someone is up to the square with a remediation option, and they at any point during that remediation option find something that determines that the house is deteriorated more than what it is when that remediation option was dealt with by their engineer or by the housing agency, they can absolutely come back into the housing agency with proof. Okay. That there is further deterioration in that house, and the housing agency want to review that.
Now, this is a development. There was a commitment that the science would be followed. Some would see this as a following through of that commitment, right? But, and I'll go back to one of the earliest remarks that you made. If it were I, and I wonder if you were the same, I would hold out if I can to find out what the situation is after the full review of IS465. This is in advance, right? But I still would want to know what the story is with rising walls and with foundations before I committed to this being my forever home going forward. What about you?
Yeah, but again, it's up, Greg, to the there people, are people
it's up to the public, of course.
It's up to everyone individually, but there are people there that, you know, have certain circumstances at the minute that will absolutely change their remediation option.
Yeah.
And they have found themselves in a no man's land position. And it really opens the door for those people to go back in now. And those applications will, in my opinion, be determined very, very quickly, because the evidence is there that there is further deterioration and that they have problems. So those people will be able to get moving right away now and get their application reviewed by the housing agency.
Yeah. In relation to the cohort of people out there that have results now or findings of the house, there is a level of mica within them, but it is not going to lead necessarily to a deterioration of their property. Is there any moves on to clarify that so as that we can, I'm not sure how much it might be affecting the housing market or whether the situation might be, but there are people with a finding of mica and now new evidence is suggesting that it's not really going to potentially damage the building. How big a problem is that, and what can we or should we be doing about that?
It's a big problem when it comes to people that sell in their homes in particular. You know, people that have... Like, there needs to be guidance, Greg. We're in a position here in the county where, you know, every home has nearly been determined as being a defective home, even though some homes...
That's the default position, yeah.
It's a default position. And, you know, some homes have very minimal amounts of deleterious materials within their blocks. They have quite extensive and high compressive strength tests within their blocks. But that doubt is there. And, you know, there's people, families that have homes for sale that maybe want to relocate because of they got a job in Dublin or they got a job down the country or for different reasons. And they're finding themselves in that pocket now where, you know, it doesn't matter what the house is or what the compressive strength is or what the report is. Once the word defective, deleterious materials is mentioned, you know, it puts that house in a position where everybody's saying, oh, don't touch that house.
Yeah, why
that
risk it? Yeah, why would you borrow so 350 grand?
There needs to be clear guidelines.
Yeah, exactly.
There needs to be clear determinations on what the amount of let it be pyrite, let it be mica, let it be whatever the deleterious materials are, that there's specific amounts in them, that if it's over that amount, that it's a problem, and if it's under that amount, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
And that needs to be clear when the new review is done.
I think
it opens the door for people that are trying to sell houses as well.
And it will also apply to repaired houses.
When you're not.
But if I repaired my house option 2 to 5 and I got the 40-year state guarantee and I sell it to you, does that guarantee pass to you?
Yes.
All right. Okay. It stays with the property.
Stays with the property.
We'll watch on with interest. It is a development. It's to let people take note of it. It may suit some people. Others might be pursuing with them. We'll wait and sit it out to see what happens maybe next year. But it's good to get the info out there. Thanks for helping us, Martin.
Thank you.
All right then. That's Councillor Martin McDermott there. Back with more shortly. It's good morning now to Pat O'Toole, political correspondent with the Irish Farmers Journal. Pat, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Right, the front page splash on the Farmers Journal today, quite favourable for at least two of the government parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They still are commanding a lot of love from the farming community.
Yeah, if there were an election in the morning, and now we know there will be an election campaign in the morning and an election on the 29th of November, what would the preferred party be? So, both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are up on our survey. So we do a survey of over 1,000 farmers twice a year. And both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are up on the May survey, which is just in advance of the European and local elections. Fine Gael are up 3% to 37. Fianna Fáil are up 3% to 23. So a combined 60% for the two major coalition partners.
But not such great news for Sinn Féin. I'm not sure if the survey shows this. But their support amongst the farming community that you poll, incredibly low. Is that because farmers don't like their policies? Is it a bit of the devil you know? And I don't mean that calling the parties that are currently in government the devil, don't get me wrong. Or is it that they don't like the Sinn Féin policy or don't know it?
Really good question. Don't like it or don't know it. Martin Kenny is back in as the ag spokesperson since the summer, and I had a sit down with him recently, and he agreed that Sinn Féin have work to do in getting their message across to farmers. They believe that they have a package that will appeal to farmers. But Sinn Féin have historically polled low in our surveys. But there was a worrying drop in Sinn Féin's performance in our most recent survey in May. They had gone down from 13 to 6%. And I pointed out at the time that Sinn Féin typically poll nationally about twice as the vote that farmers are giving them. So as a demographic, farmers seem to be less positively disposed to Sinn Féin than the general public. But that held true in the local and European elections. Sinn Féin got 12%, exactly twice the 6% that they polled with us. So the fact that they're down again in this poll to 4% will be a worry for Martin Kenny and Mary Lou MacDonald. And I think that we're going to see a very vigorous election campaign. Obviously, Sinn Féin did very well in the last campaign during the three and a half weeks of the campaign itself. Sinn Féin rose consistently in the polls and ended up being the largest first preference level of support in the 2020 election on just under 25%. What is really interesting is the third force, I suppose, is Independent Ireland, the party founded a year ago by Michael Collins and Richard O'Donoghue, and augmented significantly by Michael Fitzmaurice joining them early this year. They're on 10%. And then the remaining independents, people like Thomas Pringle in Donegal, to the Healy Rays, Matty McGrath, Carol Nolan, Verona Murphy, they're on 20%. And farmers have said that their preferred coalition government would be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. But the second most popular coalition will be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Independents. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, 7% of farmers said that they would support Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens, the outgoing government.
Seven. OK, well, I think people can extrapolate from that the popularity of the Greens amongst the farming community. It's possible Minister John McConnell-Ogue is facing into his last 3 weeks as the Agriculture Minister. You ask farmers specifically about him. What are the findings there?
So we do this every time, and the findings are consistent in that farmers are hard taskmasters, and I suppose it breaks its heart generally. And depending on, it's quite a bellwether of farmers' attitude to life and how they feel about farming. whether the minister goes up or down. But it usually breaks roughly a third indifferent, a third looking him poor, a bit more than a third, and a third or a bit less look on him as performing well. So that's where we are this time. 27% say good or very good. Most of those are in the good category, only 3% very good. 42% are saying poor or very poor, and about 31% indifferent. And he's polling lowest among dairy farmers and tillage farmers. Now, I think the dairy farmers is very much linked to the issues around the derogation and, you know, the curbs that are there on output and the stocking numbers for dairy farmers, which is something which is coming from Brussels. It's not even agriculture, it's environment, which is the competent Commissioner Sinkevicius, who was the environment commissioner, was the person who was responsible for that particular issue. But, of course, farmers look on the minister as their representative in Brussels and they hold him accountable for everything. So Charlie McConnell Logue has a low rating among dairy farmers. And then tillage farmers, there was the whole controversy around the strong cooperation measure in the summer. But tillage farming is on the floor. It's had a very difficult 2 years. Bad springs, tough harvests, moderate crops, falling prices, very high input costs. And again, there's two ways of looking at this. Are tillage farmers saying that they're not impressed with the minister, but they're just not impressed with life? And what we found over 10 years of this is that there are shifts in the approval. We've had Simon Coveney and Michael Creed and now Charlie McConnell. We had the two short-lived Fianna Fáil ministers in between Dara Cleary and Barry Cowan. But what we find is that the approval ratings move within fairly narrow parameters up and down. And Charlie McConnell has been reasonably consistent. What is interesting is that he has done a couple of rounds of meetings as minister. Like, his tenure has seen some very big ticket issues. We visited every single county in Ireland for public meetings at the time of the CAP reform. And there were some very robust exchanges. But I do think there was a respect for the level of engagement that he was willing to commit to. And the fact that he was willing to meet farmers face-to-face.
58% indifferent or positive is it's not terrible, is it?
Exactly. Well, this is the thing, because, I mean, indifferent is a funny word. Interestingly, we asked for government approval, and it was slightly higher, but we used the word fair rather than indifferent. And I think, indifferent means that neither good nor bad. Yeah. So I think that if you were to ask farmers, what do you think of Charlie McConnell Logue, and what do you think of the Minister for Agriculture, it's quite interesting that they have, it's the ministry and the department that that raises the hackles of farmers. I think he's a very personable man, as you know, and I think farmers have personal regard for him. But there is daily interface. It's almost like Rate My Teacher, because farmers have daily interface with the Department of Agriculture. They have constant homework to do. The amount of verification work that farmers have to do and paperwork that farmers have to do to comply with all the various schemes and requirements of food production, which are necessary.
Farmers understand the game. They understand what we are in control of, what we're not in control of. And I think really, you know, a strong voice that is at least seen to be standing up to Europe, and I'm not saying whether Charlie McConnell is or not, that would go a long way, I think, in winning over the indifference, because they know the story, right? They know where the rules are made, but they also know that if you go over to Europe and stare someone in the eye and make that argument, even if you come back having failed, that would mean a lot.
Well, you're into interesting territory here now, because we're launching into this general election campaign in the wake of the US general election. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's going to be a mood of unease among farmers about, like, farmers have signed up in general to the Climate Action Plan and the, you know, and the requirements there to the water quality issues and the derogation and the changes that are being made there and the constraints that's imposing on farmers on a day-to-day basis. You've got calendar farming, you've got all the rules and regulation, eye in the sky, satellites, endless inspections. But Donald Trump, when he became president in 2016, immediately pulled the US out of the Paris Agreement on climate change, leaving Europe almost standing alone. He's likely to do that again. And that's going to cause issues all over Europe. We saw the protests earlier this year with European farmers And whatever about being asked to do it as part of a global effort, being asked to do it as part of a regional effort, when the American government is facing in the opposite direction and the Chinese and the Russians as well are, you know, not carrying their weight in relation to climate change, are farmers willing to be best in class and willing to... that's going to be, you know, I think that's going to be the dominant theme of this upcoming election.
So,
I think that, and again on trade, Donald Trump has made it very clear he intends to impose tariffs. China are his target, but global trade wars are really bad for farmers' business. They're bad for all business, but they're very bad for farmers' business. And I think farmers are going to be nervous about that and looking for reinsurance to Europe. There was a Mercosur protest at the Dáil over a potential trade agreement which would see German cars going to South America in exchange for Brazilian beef. That's kind of the way the Mercosur deal is being portrayed. Farmers will be worried that if a trade war occurs, that food will be in the front line. And the Chinese have frequently targeted food when the EU proposed to put fairly significant tariffs on Chinese electric cars. The Chinese immediately responded by imposing tariffs on dairy products. So it's
big markets.
Farmers feel quite vulnerable at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Pat, listen, thanks so much for the insight. Really interesting information, and actually setting the scene also too for the next 3 weeks. Really appreciate your time, Pat. Keep up the great work at the Farmers Journal. Take care. Niall's with me now. Niall, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Right. Obviously, there's a lot of media coverage today of what I honestly thought was old news. But anyway, here we are. And that is that Milford is now accommodating international protection applicants. What's your take on this as a local?
As far as I can remember, back in 2022, the Ukrainian refugees were IPAS refugees. And they were housed here in Milford since then. And they've obviously been moved out into places within the community. So now more and more other refugees are coming in from other war-torn countries. And I don't see that as a problem at all. And there are actually fewer refugees here now than there were in 2022.
Are you getting a sense that that's the general view of the population, Niall, or are some people concerned that the demographic of the refugees is changing?
I think there is a problem with regard to race here by amongst a few people, and those people are stirring things up now because there's an election coming. That's my honest opinion on that. And they're trying to motivate and cause trouble now for the refugees that are here.
You worked with the Ukrainian refugees when they were the predominant residents.
I taught English as a volunteer to them when they were here initially. And I didn't continue with it because of health reasons. Mm-hmm. But they were very nice people, and the people that are here at the moment, I've met some of them. Very, very nice people. You couldn't ask for nicer people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to avoid it being politicised. That's why I'm so keen to speak to people from Milford. You're one voice. There are many others out there as well. I think it's important that everyone sort of takes a breath in talking about this, I think.
Yeah, well, I worked abroad for many years and appreciated the people that I worked with in other countries. And I was treated very well, even in countries in Africa. And therefore, I feel that, you know, we owe them something as well, because most of the problems they have are actually caused by people in the West and politicians in the West.
But also, Niall, we do have to recognize people's concerns. And I think, you know, maybe people might try and politicize this over race, but I think people's concerns are not based necessarily on race. They're based on safety, i.e. maybe access to the hotel and facilities, spaces in schools, the provision of bus services when other families are struggling to get their children to school, the ability to get an appointment in the local doctors. Those are the type of things that the government still, some would argue, is not really addressing genuine non-racial based concerns.
Yeah, but I would agree with that. I would agree with the likes of Declan Meehan and Liam Blaney as well, because they were both involved in trying to resolve issues around service problems for the refugees and for local people. And it's the government that's at fault here. It's not the local people here, nor the local politicians.
Do you believe this is going to be a hotbed of conversation, Niall, or do you believe now that this contract has been signed and it's been made public that it will pass over?
It's just a continuation of the other contracts. And, Greg, I don't think it's going to be cause any major problems here at all. The only thing I would be worried about is people from outside the community coming in and causing the problems, people from within the community.
We'll watch on. I kind of referenced that, and that's why it's important. I'm not saying there's not concern, but I also want to know what the concern is, the level of concern. I think we've that responsibility. All right, Niall, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Niall there. Keep your calls and comments coming in. Greg, when someone calls you a lefty, it just means you're not acting like a frothing-at-the-mouth, rage-baiting con man. There is no sensible centre anymore. If you're not screaming about immigrants, eating pets or the gays, coming for the kids, then you're a communist, apparently. I see, I don't understand some of these terminologies. All I know is that there is not one individual or one collective of individuals that kind of aligns to my points of view. I have different points of view on different things. So I don't know how. Maybe I... Was that last interview a lefty interview? I haven't a clue. It's unfair to paint all Gardaí with the same brush. Years ago, if you had a son in the Garda, it was an honour. We've some good ones too, and they need to be acknowledged. Thank you, enjoying your show. I think you've probably... I'm sorry, I think you've missed picked my comments up incorrectly. I wasn't talking about the Gardaí or the quality of Gardaí. What I was saying was, I'll just recap. I think the Gardaí, being a member of the Gardaí, is a thankless job now. I think... The respect for the uniform has gone to some extent. I think, and we've seen it, that assaults in Gardaí are happening all the time. They're often then put into the front line of controversial policies. I'm thinking of sort of the front line of riots and that type of stuff, and they become the target. So I wasn't painting all Gardaí with the same brush. My comments were, I don't think it's a very attractive job anymore. Whether it was or not in the past, I don't know. My perception is that it was. So sorry if I didn't make myself very clear there. Why is there no... by the way, another 7 or 8 people who've been waiting hard on their driving test in Letterkenny have been told at short notice that the test isn't going ahead today. I really feel for them. Why is there no cover? People are entitled to get sick or take annual leave. I don't know the circumstances of it. They need more people working with them and supporting them. This is not in any way having a go at testers. But if someone is off sick or if someone is on annual leave or something happens, surely there should be a plan to cover it. We're waiting so long. That's 14 tests now in 2 days from people that have got them cancelled at short notice in Letterkenny. And they're hard to come by. And what that means to you, if you are going on the when might I be invited for a test and it says the second week in December, that might be updated now to say January. So it's a ripple effect. It's not just today. It's rescheduling those 14. But it also, of course, knocks everyone back potentially. As I say, this is not down to the testers. They're entitled to get sick, take annual leave. I don't know the circumstances. But why is there only 4 in the whole county? It is 4, isn't it? 3 in Letterkenny, 1 in Donegal Town, and then Buncrana is covered from those four, however they manage to do that. 4 in all of this county in the waiting lists, people waiting months and months and months and months. The streets of Letterkenny, in this caller's opinion, are not safe. My grandmother stopped shopping down the main street since Christmas last year. 2 foreigners, as they've described, followed her either side to her car to car park. They turned and went back up the hill when 2 delivery men got out of the lorry. It's all on camera. God bless her. Okay, that's a person's real life lived experience. I see channels on YouTube showing people filming in public, targeting sensitive areas so they get a reaction. They say they have a right to do so as it's a public area. What law are we breaking, etc.? Would these people get away with it in Spain or Italy or even England? Is that in Ireland? Because I on TikTok I did start getting... there's a massive trend in America, and it is, what is it? It's effectively to test the Constitution. So you'll get people that will go in and start filming in a post office, for an example, or it could be a library. And they want the staff to get peeved off because they challenge them that they're entitled to do so. And they film it and all this kind of stuff. Is it happening in Ireland now as well? I don't see the point of it. It's kind of dying a death in America, I think. Just before a break, to let you know what's coming up after 12, John Breslin is broadcasting live from the annual Northwest Future of Energy Conference, jointly hosted by the Londonderry Chamber of Commerce and Letterkenny Chambers. It is running in the Ebrington Hotel today. So it's going to focus on the theme of sustainable energy through innovation. John Breslin's going to be broadcasting live from that event. I am up there as well at 2 o'clock chairing a panel discussion about that stuff. So looking forward to that. But anyway, by the by, listen to John Breslin's show to get more information. Tanya McColgan is joining us on the programme now, as is Lorraine Lynch, both of you, members of the MUF Responders. Morning, Tanya.
Hi, good morning, Greg. How are you going?
I'm doing good. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning, Greg. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Tanya, I'll start with you, if that's okay, because this is about sort of developing MUF Responders. Talk to me about the process and where you're at, Tanya.
That's right, Greg. We are a branch here covering the areas between Burnfoot, Redcastle, MUF, Quigley's Point, and we've been in training for the last 6 months or so.
Fantastic.
We've been training every Wednesday night, and we have nearly 6 months behind us now, so we're moving on, hopefully, in January. The Community First Responders, there's about 16 of us. We're hoping to sort of go live the end of January.
That's amazing. And obviously people know, but we'll just remind them, First Responders, and we've seen them in other areas, do an amazing life-saving work. This is about
getting first,
isn't it, to a life-threatening medical emergency and giving the patient as best a chance of survival as possible before the emergency services arrive.
That's correct, Greg, yeah.
Yeah, so you stabilise them for potentially and provide care.
Stabilise them.
Yeah, Lorraine, in terms of equipment, though, there's a lot of stuff is required, and I think that's part of why we're chatting, isn't it? You know, because you need the right equipment to save lives.
You need the right equipment at the scene, but you also need the, like, for training as well, for us to get established. So the training of all the volunteers, we need to have the dummies and the different things as well. So, but on the scene, the defibrillator is the main one, and the kit bags for all the volunteers is quite a lot. There's quite a lot involved, and you don't realize that until you're sitting on the Wednesday nights and you're like, oh my God, there's so much to be doing here. Yeah.
Have you totaled it? How much are you looking to raise to provide this equipment? And you know what? It's one of those things, whether you're in Redcastle or whether you're in Burnfoot, you never know when one of the 16 or two of the 16 will be landing to you. We hope it never happens to us, but unfortunately it does all of the time. Yeah. So that's why it's in all of our interest to help fund this. But do we know how much needs to be raised, Lorraine?
Well, we, in our group, we have 16 volunteers, and the long-term plan is to have everybody kitted out with their own bag and their own defibrillator. So that if you break it down like that, the full thing roughly comes in at about 1,800 per kit bag and defibrillator. So it's a lot of money.
It is, but for what it can achieve, it's representing great value as well. Tanya, what's happening so far in terms of fundraising, or how can people support? Like, I mean, there are some multi-million euro businesses in Inishowen, and one of those
there
could
is.
Get really good tax breaks and sort all this out. And I'll tell
exactly.
you one thing, they can come on this radio station and I'll blow smoke wherever they want for as long as they want, right? Because it would be amazing if one company could come in and sort this all out. But that being said, applications are ongoing, not applications, endeavours are ongoing to raise money.
Yeah. People, individuals, businesses have been amazing, so generous, and we'd like to thank them so far. Mm-hmm. We have had a few fundraisers to date, very successful, very well supported. We have another one coming up now in November, like that, and it can be, you know, hopefully a full house and well attended. But like that will be, you know, that is on the 23rd of November.
That's rock and roll bingo in the Point Inn, is it not?
That's the rock and rave bingo.
Rock and rave,
yes.
Okay. You had me at roll, but you've got me at rave.
And that's coming up now on the 23rd in Quigley's Point in the Point Inn. We have DJ Paddy Higgerty, who is comparing and running that. If people haven't been before, it is great fun. It's very lively, very energetic. Lots of prizes have been sponsored. And it's a great way, you know, having fun at the same time, getting these funds that we need together. So that's our next up and coming fundraiser, the last of the year.
And Lorraine, but
people so far.
Yeah, they can, and people can come up with their own ideas. You know, maybe there's someone out there who benefited from this or may have benefited from this and want other families to have maybe this as a potentially life-saving intervention. Maybe they want to run individual fundraisers and contribute.
Yeah, everything is welcome. And everybody, like the more people that join, like we are like currently now, there'll be a new recruitment of members welcome, and they can look us up on muffcfr@gmail.com or talk to us, you know, the volunteers yourself, or come along to one of the training nights on Wednesday at 7:30 in the GAA club. But the more you have out there along the way, you know, it fills the gaps. And like that, we are complementing the National Ambulance Service. So the more people spread out along the line and linked up, you know, with the other groups, Newton, Cunningham, Buncrana, Kilmany, the more people, the better, you know.
And Lorraine, I think it's fair to say the likes of yourself, Tanya, and all the others that have been giving up their time lately to go through training, but also actually to make that commitment to answer the call to go and try and save someone's life. You know, of the community, you guys are from the community yourself, and you're just asking the community to back you. I don't think that's a big ask.
To back us and back themselves.
Well, that's
easy. We're there for them. We're there for them, 100%. And at the end of the day, it is a voluntary service. Like we will be there as much as we can. We may not get to everything, but no, that's the whole point, is to increase the chances for any family that has to go through something traumatic. And the training's there for everybody. Like if they wanted to come and join us, as Tanya was saying, it's invaluable for the community, definitely.
Right. Again, just to recap, you know, any big businesses out there, when you talk of potential millions of euro turnover, to have an entire community here covered by these amazing volunteers, it would be fantastic PR, and one big donation would sort an awful lot of this out. If you're interested in that, please get in contact with us here, and we'll certainly pass it on. I mean, what an investment in the community from a business this would be. Tanya, what was I going to ask you? Something else I was going to ask you. If people want more information about the work that you're doing, or maybe they're going, right, okay, this is something I could get involved in, or maybe they've got a fundraising idea, or maybe they've donations, whatever it might be, what's the port of call, Tanya?
That would be amazing. Contact any of us, but muffcfr@gmail.com, or we have a Facebook page, Muff Community First Responders. All ideas, everything's welcome. Like, you know, the next one now, as I say, is the 23rd of this month.
Yeah, indeed. And councillors have discretionary funding as well.
We're on that for January.
You're ahead of me. All right, which one of you is rock? Which one of you is rock, and which one of you is rave ahead of the bingo? That's what I'm interested in. Lorraine, you come across as rave, I think.
I think I'm a raver, yeah, definitely. Tanya's rock and I'm rave, absolutely.
All right, ladies, so well done for what you're doing. Get back in touch with us if you need any further publicity, please. Tanya McColgan there, Lorraine Lynch, members of the Muff First Responders. They're looking to establish, and are very close to establishing, a first responders service from Muff. It's the Muff branch, so they'd be covering a big distance from Redcastle to Burnfoot. Now, that's just to give you an idea. It's going to link in then to Newtown Cunningham, but all that's to be worked out, right? But these are groups of individuals, 16 of them, that, God forbid, there's an emergency. As you know, response times can be different. It could be a while before the ambulance can get there, but these people land where the patient is. They provide the appropriate care. That could be CPR, which is vital in an emergency, or defibrillation, which again can quite literally bring someone back to life. And they're all doing it on a volunteer basis. And all they're asking for, and quite modestly, I think, is to for support in getting the gear that could end up sitting on your kitchen floor, God forbid. So the next big event they have is the 23rd of November. It's Rock and Rave Bingo. It's in the Point Inn. So you can support them that way. But any other ideas, I'm sure they're more than happy facilitate. And if any big business or rich individual wants to get that really up and running, let us know. We'll pass it on. Please ask Martin McDermott about the need for a working group involving banks, auctioneers, engineers and lawyers, everyone involved in the conveyancing process, to get around the table and establish how remediated houses will be sold and how to get houses moving on the market where homeowners cannot sell due to mica-only readings on otherwise perfectly good houses not showing any damage. Good question. I put that actually to Martin. It's definitely an area, I think, that needs looking at, because we need houses in the housing market, don't we? Why is Minister Darragh O'Brien so shy of coming to Donegal? Because we will not be his voters. Is that hanging his party colleague and minister in the county out to dry? I'm not sure. That's up to you guys to describe. We now have a situation in our area where we have a small two-teacher, 30 children, Irish-speaking national school in the Gaeltacht, which already accepted some Ukrainian children and now is being told that up to 30 IP people are arriving in a local hotel and will be attending the school. Now, how is that going to work for the local children? How are teachers going to cope teaching in Irish to locals and try and accommodate children that may not have a word of English? I don't know the answer to that question. But that is a question a listener has. OK, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Tomorrow we're back with a very interesting programme as always. Lots to discuss with the Friday panel. That's entertainment and so much more besides. Stay tuned. John Breslin is coming up around the Northwest live from the annual Northwest Future of Energy Conference in Derry. And I'll be up there too. Have a great day, everyone.